In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
And welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And this week, we are going to do a part one episode talking about the first of two iconic comedy film directors.
Okay.
One of them was influential more so, I think, for the Gen X crowd, even some of the boomers, seeing as he was a boomer.
Yeah.
And
well, still is. He's still around, right?
I think he's still alive.
Yeah.
I know his wife is no longer alive. Funny, who he was married to when you consider that he was kind of the top comedian of the day as far as film was concerned.
Really?
And who she was. You know who his wife was, right?
No.
Anne Bancroft. We're talking, of course, about a Mr. Melvin Kaminsky, better known as Mel Brooks.
Yes.
And yes, his wife was Anne Bancroft, who's best known, I think, for the Helen Keller movie, and then the black and white Helen Keller movie.
Oh, really?
I forget. The Miracle Worker? Yeah, The Miracle Worker.
Okay. I'm not familiar with Anne Bancroft. I know the name.
The Graduate.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
She's Mrs. Really? Robinson, yes.
He was married to Mrs. Robinson?
Yes.
Damn.
She's also in G.I. Jane, interestingly enough. She's the female senator who's trying to push through the initiative for Demi Moore's character to be in the SEAL program.
Wow.
That's her in her later years.
Wow.
But yeah, Anne Bancroft.
Wow.
That was his wife.
I did not know that. That's insane.
It's not a pairing that you would think of. She's much more known for dramatic type roles. Definitely not known as necessarily a comedic type person, and he was just comedic to the max.
That's insane, dude.
And so yeah, we're talking about Mel Brooks and kind of his comedic legend. I'm pretty sure he was an inspiration to the director we'll talk about in the second half.
Yeah.
That shall remain a mystery till the second half. But Mel Brooks now. Do you remember your introduction to him? Do you kind of remember the first Mel Brooks movie that you saw, or at least the first time you really recognized Mel Brooks as a person?
The first time as far as recognizing him as a person, I was able to recognize him as a person when I saw Robin Hood Men in Tights, but I went and saw that in the theater.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Lucky you.
I saw that in the theater. I think it was like 10.
See,
interesting.
I saw Prince of Thieves in the theater, but I did not see Men in Tights in theater.
I also saw Prince of Thieves in theater.
Okay.
But I saw that, but I knew who Mel Brooks was probably, oh my goodness.
Because that would have been.
I recognized who Mel Brooks was, and I was a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation at the time as a kid.
Well, 93 is when Men in Tights came out.
93. So that would have been right, because I was born in 82, so I was 11.
Yeah, would have been around that time.
Yeah.
And Next Generation
was a summer film. Yeah, and TNG was big. So I would say that.
That
probably
the
is the most recognizable time was that, but I mean beforehand, I think I might have been introduced to like History of the World Part One.
Oh, that's a great way to be introduced.
Yeah, right. But you know what? Everybody knows like the main film that everybody really references to him probably is Spaceballs.
Yeah,
that's the one that like he did other great films before that.
Oh yeah.
But Spaceballs put him on the map with multiple generations.
Well, and Spaceballs would be the one that I can remember as kind of the first one that I hit, being the Star Wars fan that I am.
Yeah, totally.
You see Spaceballs, and it's like, this is, at the time, we're like, this is the perfect Star Wars parody ever. Of course, not so much, but still.
Well, really good. I would still consider it to be very valid in many different
ways. In many different ways. I mean, Rick Moranis in that movie is, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Well, first, I wanted to go over kind of a little brief history of the movies that he's directed. A lot less than I actually thought. He's been an actor in a lot of movies, done a lot of voice work recently with stuff, but I'm focusing more just on his directing talents, his directing ability, because I think that really shows the truth of his full comedic, you know, knowledge and talent, art, whatever, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
So the first feature film that he directed was actually the original Producers.
That's the first film he did?
With Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. Yeah, that was his first
feature film.
And I mean, if you really think about it, I know we talked earlier, you're a little more familiar with the Matthew Broderick, Nathan Lane Producers.
I am more familiar only because I haven't, and I mean, you know, stone me if you have to, but
well, the biggest difference, I would say, I haven't seen
the original one.
That's
really
okay.
I've seen a couple of passing scenes, and it's a film that I always wanted to sit and watch.
Yeah.
But I never really got the chance to see it. I did with a roommate of mine years ago, watched the remake of The Producers with Uma Thurman and Nathan Lane and Broderick.
That's that one. Now, here's the fun thing about that one. Okay, in that one, they get the guy to play Hitler, you know, springtime in Germany, Hitler. And he plays Hitler as, like, super, super gay.
Yes, super ridiculously gay. Effeminate. And honestly, that take on it was really funny.
Well,
it was really funny. Because they were taking the stereotypes of the time.
Well, and the thing is, in the original Producers, they actually have the guy who does Hitler as a super hippie. Because it was made in 1967.
And so they flipped it, I think, because
the hippie thing,
I think,
it
was
a
more relatable stereotype at the time or something. Not that I'm trying to necessarily, and I'm not getting into this. Like, don't get me wrong, because this is really that the translation of hippie Hitler as opposed to effeminate Hitler is at the time that version of The Producers came out.
It made sense as the comedy.
Whether
or not it would be acceptable comedy nowadays.
Super stigmatizing still, but it was more relatable as a comedic take.
Well, and I actually just recently started watching a Netflix special that was, it's the comedy roast with Jeff Ross, but they're doing historical roasts.
I've heard about this. A friend of mine told me about him, and they are okay. Super offensive.
Some of them are okay. They are offensive.
Part of me is curious. Like, I gotta check them out.
They did a World War II one, and when they were talking about World War II, he even says, when we were talking about doing a World War II one, there's one person that stood out to do the roast, but we didn't want to make him the star of the show. So instead, we decided to roast Anne Frank. Well, they're really nice about it. How they deal with Anne Frank, they actually deal with Anne Frank really well.
Like in a more respectable manner, you would
to
say?
Her, yes. They were pretty respectful. They still make a few jokes at her expense.
So it's like a roast of Adolf Hitler, but with Anne Frank's name on it instead.
Adolf Hitler is one of the people on the dais who does stuff, and basically everybody attacks Adolf Hitler. There's there's FDR. He gets a few attacks at him.
Oh, that's great.
There's Don Rickles. So it's FDR, Don Rickles, and Hitler on the dais.
Wait a minute.
And then Jeff Ross.
Don Rickles is played by somebody else, because didn't he just pass?
Don Rickles is actually played by his daughter. She is amazing.
Oh, my goodness.
She's amazing. Well,
because I'm assuming Rickles may have railed against Hitler at that time?
Well, no, he was just a comedian of the time.
Oh, okay.
And he was he was a comedian after that, after having been in the military. He was actually in the military.
Served. Oh, yeah. Cool.
So, his daughter came there to play him wearing a bald cap and everything. She is hilarious.
That's fantastic.
But Rickles' wife, I think the funny part about it culturally is that everybody that's on the panel, Jeff Ross, the comedian they have playing Anne Frank, FDR is played by John Lovitz.
Really, oh, that's well great.
And then so you have, I forget.
I know Gottfried plays Hitler.
Gilbert Gottfried plays Hitler.
He's going to slay, though.
And so they have the whole dais, though, is they're all of Jewish descent.
Oh,
single one of them. Including,
that's cool.
And in fact,
that's cool.
They even have Anne Frank make the joke that Hitler, we got the loudest, most annoying Jew ever to play you.
Oh,
with
nice.
Gilbert Gottfried. And Gottfried, he goes up to do it, and it's totally in Gilbert Gottfried's voice.
And it's Gilbert Gottfried.
And he's offensive. He says offensive stuff, but, like, he's playing Hitler, so he's trying to say offensive stuff.
Right, and that's the point.
He cannot keep from laughing the whole time. It's actually really, really... Gottfried doing the humorous version of Hitler is so funny.
That's fantastic.
So funny. But anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't this about Mel Brooks, damn it?
Hey, he was Jewish, too.
This is true.
Or he is Jewish. He's still alive. So, Producers, his first film.
Yes.
Then a film called The 12 Chairs, which I am not familiar with.
Never heard of it. Was that something he was in, or did he direct it?
Directed. These are all directed stuff from
his. Did he write it as well?
I think he did. Again, just one I'm not familiar with.
Cool.
Never saw anything about it. Don't really know anything about it.
Okay.
I'm guessing it was comedy, because that's what he did.
Okay, cool.
Then you have coming out the same year. That was 1970, by the way, The 12 Chairs. Coming out both in 1974, made around the same time. Young Frankenstein.
Okay.
Sorry. Young Frankenstein. And Blazing Saddles. And there's actually an interesting connection between the two. Gene Wilder only signed on to do Blazing Saddles after they fired the original actor that played the Waco kid for actually being a drunk. Funny enough.
Who was supposed to play the Waco kid?
I forget the name of the actor, but he showed up on set actually drunk.
Oh, wow.
And so he got fired. That's fine. Richard Pryor was originally supposed to play Cleavon Little's part.
Oh, wow.
The main part. He helped write most of it, but he didn't get the part.
Wow. Did he just not get it? Did he audition for it and not get it?
There was some insurance issues. They weren't sure. The studio wasn't sure that they were going to be able to feel comfortable insuring Richard Pryor to do that.
So expensive?
Because his habit was so expensive.
Oh.
This is when he was knee-deep in
drug habit. He was right in the middle of that. Oh,
yeah, they didn't want to deal with the issues revolving around that at that time.
Yeah.
Imagine how there's a lot more humor that Richard Pryor would have brought to the role, but at the same time, I think that Cleavon Little's kind of understated humor was just great for it.
I think he was fantastic.
Where do white women at? Beautiful. Beautiful.
Although Pryor would have been able to pull that line off too.
True. That would have been a good one for him. But the whole taking himself hostage scene.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I think Pryor would have overdone that. But anyway.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Gene Wilder agreed to come in halfway through the production of Blazing Saddles to play the part of the Waco kid as long as Mel Brooks helped make this movie that
Young Frankenstein
that Wilder wanted done. Young Frankenstein.
Because that was a passion project of Wilder's.
Oh, yes. Big passion project
of his. Did Brooks co-write it with him then?
I don't know if Brooks made some tweaks and stuff on it, but I mean, there's enough Mel Brooks style jokes in there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, nice knockers. That's a Mel Brooks joke right there.
Yeah.
Although some of the funniest jokes are actually just stuff that they improvised, like the Ovaltine joke.
That was an improv?
That's an improv, yeah.
That's funny.
That's an improv. And that's,
even funnier that it's an improv.
Yeah, well, Cloris Leachman is just a great, great improv actress, actress to begin with. Everything that she does is hilarious.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was just an improv moment on her part. And then, funny enough, anybody that goes now to try to watch Young Frankenstein, anybody from the younger generations, especially the millennials that saw their parents watch Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
They'll have a little bit of a shocker. Peter Boyle is so great as the monster.
Peter Boyle was great in everything, man. I don't think I ever saw anything I didn't like Peter Boyle in.
I mean, well, he's even actually good in the Scooby-Doo movies.
Yeah.
The live-action Scooby-Doo movies. He's good in that. Although, I like Matthew Lillard in the live-action Scooby-Doo movies.
Yes.
He's hilarious in those.
Well, he was good enough to get the voiceover part.
He is so shaggy. For years. He's great. But yeah, Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, probably two of his most iconic movies, other than, again, the Spaceballs, because everybody knows it. But those two movies are so iconic in the sense that they're not necessarily, I guess Young Frankenstein is a direct parody, but then again, it's not. It's more of a sequel that's a parody. Although they used, interestingly enough, the laboratory that they use in Young Frankenstein is the laboratory from the original Frankenstein movies.
They got their hands on the Universal set?
Yes, those are the Universal sets.
Whoa!
Yeah. They're done on the laboratory. It's the Universal Set Laboratory.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So Yeah, that's a neat little addition to have on it. But it's more sequel-y than it is entirely parody. It's just a parody sequel. You know what I'm saying?
I was going to say, because
it's not a direct parody of those.
He's supposed to be the grandson?
He's the grandson of Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like denying the name and all the stuff that happened. He's a
Frankenstein, not a Frankenstein, and yet goes there and all these things happen.
Right.
Great movie, though. Hilarious movie. Terry Garr, so great in that movie.
Yeah.
So great. Everybody is great in the movie. The hump joke, that was an accident. That was literally an accident that it got moved at one point during between two shots, and they decided to make it a thing to move it all the time.
And then they brought it back with the mole.
Yes.
in Men in Tights.
Yes, they did. So then you get Silent Movie, which is another one I haven't seen.
I forgot about Silent Movie.
But yes. And it's a Marcel Marceau type movie, and he's in it.
Yes.
Amazing. Very good.
Yeah. Silent Movie is, I think I've only seen it once, and I saw it once as a kid.
I
don't think I've seen it since.
I've seen bits and pieces. I've not seen the whole thing.
But I forgot that Silent Movie was like
a Mel Brooks film.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a Mel Brooks film.
And that was in 76. And in 77, High Anxiety. And this is the one that is I haven't seen, but I know it's a parody of specifically Vertigo, the Alfred Hitchcock movie Vertigo.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But it's kind of a parody of those type of movies, at that point, the 70s psychological kind of thrillers, which Vertigo would fall into then, not now.
Dude, that guy was on the pulse every single film he made.
He was. And then you have, now Spaceballs was my introduction. But my favorite when I was a kid, I love Blazing Saddles. I love so many scenes from that. It's so funny, especially because my father so into Westerns. So for this to be a humorous Western, the only other humorous Western I know is John Wayne's McClintock. And I mean, that one does not age well with all the misogyny involved.
Right.
Although some lines are just iconic from it. There's still one or two lines. Great party. Where's the whiskey? Love doing that. People look at you like, what the hell are you talking about? Great party, but no whiskey. We go home now. Nobody has any idea what we're talking about. But anyway.
I've seen that film once.
Yeah.
It was at your house.
Yeah.
Like.
So this is 20 years ago.
Yeah, 20 years ago. Once. I've seen that film. I loved it when I saw it, you know, back on your VHS player in your apartment.
I have it on DVD.
Afterwards,
now.
We played Mario Party. I remember that night.
I have it on DVD now. And cool. it's still, again, if you take the misogyny aside, it is a funny movie. John Wayne sings.
Well, if you think about it, actually, you keep the misogyny intact, and it's more of a time period piece
at
that point.
It is a period piece. And I mean, just there's some moments in that movie, you know?
Yeah.
And I am not intoxicated. Yet. It's such a good movie.
God,
such
it's been forever since I've seen it. I barely remember anything
from
it.
So many funny moments.
I remember
in that
the
movie.
Weird, like the big mud fight or something like that.
Oh, the clay fight is amazing.
Yes.
There's another fight where, like, there's these. At first, it's Patrick Wayne actually in another part, John Wayne's son. He's in a part that his character works for John Wayne's character, but they're not related in the movie.
Right.
But he ends up getting in a fight with another young man. He wins the fight. Well, that young man's uncle comes and gets mad because that Patrick Wayne's character is just a farmer.
Right.
So he's not anybody of important social standing.
Right.
So it hurts his family's social standing that one of his family was beaten up by this poor farmer.
Right.
So the uncle is going to fight him. The uncle's just this big brute of a man with this little tiny voice. And he's like, you know, I can't have this for my family. And John Wayne's character's, all right, okay, it's going to be a fair fight, though. There's going to be none of this. And he elbows him in the gut. And the guy, you know, just reacts like, oh, man, that hurts. And he says, don't do any of that. Don't do any of this. Starts doing a bunch of things to the big uncle guy.
My goodness, to show where his weaknesses are. None of this or this.
To show where all of his weaknesses are. You know, and he's the uncle's complaining the whole time. He's dumb as dirt. The uncle guy is completely dumb.
Right.
Well, they says, okay, let's start the fight then. And Patrick Wayne's character just starts punching him in the face. And he punched him like 3 or 4 times. And he's just standing there. And then kind of shakes his head like he finally recognizes he's got hit. And he goes, hey! And then hits him one time and brings him straight to the ground. And it's like the whole time John Wayne's character's trying to show him, this is how you beat this big old dude. You just try to fight him, it ain't going to happen. Well, guess what? Kid didn't pay attention. Kid was oblivious and got his ass beat.
Right.
Hilarious moment. As we're watching, we're like, that's so funny. He's trying to show him what to do. And then you see the fight happen. And then the dumb uncle's, he fought me well. It's okay. He didn't do none of that stuff. We're all good now. And walks. The uncle walks. I was like, what the hell? That's a good time, I guess. That's a happy time in our country. But anyway, that being the other great, in my opinion, Western comedy, up until recently, Million Ways to Die in the West, that's a pretty funny damn movie.
Haven't seen it yet. Want to.
Oh my gosh. Liam Neeson's, dude.
Really?
Liam Neeson's is the bad guy. He's a bad guy cowboy.
Yeah.
With an Irish accent.
Beautiful.
He said he would only do it if he got to keep the Irish accent.
Beautiful.
Okay, he is amazing. Seth MacFarlane, I love it when he does anything live action. I can't stand his animation stuff. The stories in his animation stuff just don't pull me in.
I get you.
Everything he does live action, the TV show he did, the Star Trek parody TV show.
Yeah, that's gotten approved for season 3. That one's called The Orville.
Yes.
It's gotten approved for season 3.
Have you seen
that show? Oh yeah. My wife and I are big avid watchers of that.
Oh god, it's so funny. Especially it's so not a sci-fi series, but then it throws the sci-fi at you, and then it throws a message at you
every single episode.
And it's like, what the hell?
And it's perfect homage to Star Trek, especially TNG.
Yeah.
Any of those episodes, all of them, when you go back and watch them, even just let the cheese factor kind of go out the window when you're looking at the story. That's what Gene Roddenberry was doing since the original series.
Oh, the Orville's been hilarious to watch. But
And it's, dude, the perfect amount of jokes in there that allows you to get sucked in and love the characters and still pay attention to the storyline and go, oh, wow, this actually is real. It has a message. Like, I'm curious if he does that with Ways to Die in the West, too, because he really is
there's
good.
There's some message stuff in there.
Okay.
I will say, the people that are in that movie.
Yeah.
So well cast. I mean, Giovanni Ribisi's character in that movie.
Really? He's in it?
Oh my God, he's amazing.
Oh, cool.
He is so amazing.
There's even the worst films with Giovanni Ribisi in him. I love him in all of those films.
He's like one of the highlights of this movie. So much. There are points where he's just, his movement, his ability to move.
Yeah.
Him and Sam Rockwell, I love watching them do anything because they have a fluidity to their movement.
Yeah.
Again, Giovanni Ribisi, Sam Rockwell, you know Sam Rockwell, yes?
Yes.
You know he was in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes.
That's one of his first roles. Most people don't. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. Did you know that his lines are an Easter egg specifically?
What do you mean?
Check out the East Building on Lairdman Island. Yeah.
Yes, he does Eastman and Laird
all in one. Yeah. Yep.
I remember that. Took me a second to know what you were talking about, but yes, I remember that. But yes, Giovanni Ribisi, great in the movie. Sarah Silverman is in the movie. Amazing. Her role in that is really, really good.
Charlize Theron, I know, is in it.
Charlize Theron's in it.
She actually has a guest spot on the Orville, too. She cameos on one of the episodes.
She does. Oh, God, I cannot think of her name right now. She was in Mamma Mia. She was in the second Talking Teddy Bear movie.
In Ted?
The second one. She's the lawyer in the second one. The blonde. I cannot think of her name. She's also in like Little Red Riding Hood movie. It was called just Red Riding Hood.
I've only seen the
Amanda
first
Seyfried.
Ted.
There we
that
go.
That is Amanda Seyfried. I was like Amanda something, but.
Yes. Amanda Seyfried is in it. And then NPH, dude.
Oh, cool. He's in it too?
NPH is kind of a minor villain role as well.
Cool.
Very funny.
Nice.
Need to see that one. Anyway. Blazing Saddles, great, but what I was leading to, we're coming
You're
back
like
to
going
Mel Brooks.
Into detail of all these things that are not Mel Brooks films.
We're going back
so
to
far.
Mel Brooks. We're going to talk about the film that came out in 1981.
Okay,
History of the World Part One.
Yes.
Now, first of all, what a title for a movie.
Yeah, it insinuates a part two.
Which there
hell,
never
the
is.
End credits area insinuates a part two.
Jews in space.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jews in Space, which I remembered because I saw the end of History of the World Part 1 after I saw Men in Tights.
Yeah.
And the similarity between the two songs, Jews in Space and Men in Tights, are literally like they're the same time
basically
frame. They're practically
the
same melody.
They're the same song, yeah.
Yeah.
But the moments in History of the World Part 1 are, and we're talking about good actors in Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah.
What about in History of the World Part 1? I mean, you have Sid Caesar as the caveman in the beginning. Sid Caesar, most people of our generation would only know Sid Caesar as the coach from the Grease movies.
Oh.
He's the football coach.
Okay.
But in the boomer era, even the Gen X era, he was a well-known comedian. Well-known comedian.
Oh, okay.
A little bit blue at that time period.
Yeah.
But well-known comedian.
Yeah.
So Sid Caesar, for anybody that was, again, boomer watching it, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Gregory Hines, amazing.
Right. Oh, Gregory Hines was great.
I'm trying to think of the different people. Oh, Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn was brilliant in anything she had.
Like, well, she was brilliant in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, she was like, she's fantastic in Blazing Saddles. I actually, funny enough, I just introduced my wife to Clue, the film.
Oh, yes.
That is such a great unsung film. The promotion behind it, I didn't know that it was John Landis that had written and directed it as well.
Yeah.
He co-wrote it and he directed it. But the multiple ending thing and all that, Madeline Kahn has an ad-lib scene in one of the endings.
Oh, really?
And it's
that I
brilliant.
Didn't know.
Yes.
I'm going to have to see that.
Yeah. She plays, I believe she plays Mrs. White.
Yeah, I think so.
Dressed in all black, funny enough.
Yeah.
But she has an ad-lib scene in one of them. And it's fantastic.
I would have to see it because one of her more famous lines from Blazing Saddles, that is an ad-libbed line. They actually did multiple versions of it when she's in her dressing room with the sheriff in the dark and she's talking about the size of certain body parts.
Yes.
They did multiple versions of that because they had to get one that would go past the censors, and every single one was an ad lib on her part.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the one they ended up with was the one where she sings at the end and all that?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
For anybody who does not know that scene, go watch the movie because it's a lot of fun, and that scene is funny.
That scene's hilarious.
That scene is great. It's a little racist, but the whole movie is. So if you're not prepared for that.
Yeah.
but History of the World Part One, she has a scene that has some similar connotation. I love the pre-orgy scene.
Oh.
Where she's got all these guys lined up. They all drop trow.
Right.
And she's, oh, yes, no, 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 yes. Deciding to pick which one's going to be her partner for the orgy. Yeah. Hilarious. So funny. But then
I like that.
The Last Supper. The Last Supper in that movie, in History of the World.
It's been so long since I've seen it.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I will actually explain more about the Last Supper scene for you, sir, so that you, so you can get a little understanding of it.
Oh, all right.
And finish the talk about History of the World Part 1.
Cool.
Y'all enjoy the break.
Hey, friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
The Last Supper, Mel Brooks plays, the whole time he plays a character called Comicus. He's supposed to be the first comedian.
Yes.
And so he's at the Last Supper, but he's a waiter because that's the only job he could get as a comedian, which is funny for anybody that's been in any part of the entertainment business.
Right.
But he's there doing the Last Supper and asking if people want more food, want more of this and that. And there's a break in his asking of things. And Jesus says, one of you here has betrayed me. And Comicus is the waiter. Judas, would you like something more to drink? Just like, no, I'm okay. I'm just fine. Leave me alone. And of course, he ends up being in, there's, for some reason or another, this is the Last Supper. They're all sitting on one side of the table. And at the other end of the room is Leonardo da Vinci, who was not alive at the time when the Last Supper would have taken
place.
But
he's painting them.
He's there painting them. And you end up with Comicus in the background of the painting holding a plate over Jesus' head to give that
to give the halo.
Halo
oh,
effect.
And he's standing there
yes, he's
in
standing
the
there smiling.
Yeah, he's standing there in the
so,
painting. Yeah.
So funny. And then of course and then for some reason you jump from the Last Supper to the freaking Spanish Inquisition and French Revolution and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Nothing else important happened? from what, 32 AD up until then, nothing else important happened?
Yeah, that was...
I mean, he's kind of right, but still.
No, I like the simple fact that when everything just starts crashing together at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, every continuity that was there throughout the entire film just like falls apart.
I mean, that's kind
it's
of
like
the beauty.
A hole in the universe opened up. Yeah. There was a wormhole and just everything crashes
that's
together.
That's so much the beauty of Blazing Saddles. The ending on Blazing Saddles is so fourth wall breaking. So,
oh yeah.
Again, so meta before meta ever existed as a terminology. The whole just breaking through the set into another set where Dom DeLuise is directing an old school song and dance routine with people swimming in little pools and dancing around in top hats and whatnot. And then it spills over into the whole studio lot, into the cafeteria of the studio. There is a Hitler in the cafeteria, by the way.
Oh, there
studio.
Is. I got to
yes.
go back and see it again.
And then you get the two leads leave the studio, ride horses. The bad guy also leave the studio, get in a car, and they go to the movie theater to watch the movie being played at the movie theater.
Yes. Wow.
I mean, just the brain that he was working with back in the 70s.
Yeah, the self-referential just, and all that. Just
so
ridiculous.
After History of the World, we get our Spaceballs. Beautiful Spaceballs.
Yes.
Such a great movie.
Oh, yes. And that's honestly, like, that's what I was saying. Like, the Spaceballs is like the cultural. That's the one that made that. I would say Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein and all of our parents loved those films.
Yes,
Spaceballs was the one that put him on the map for like multiple generations,
and probably made it for our parents to be like, they like Mel Brooks too. They're my kid. I love my
right?
kid.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
And it's such a great parody.
It was a bonding experience
for
many parents.
It was. They throw the some of the references are just amazing. Pizza the Hut, so funny.
Oh yeah.
The Max Headroom.
That was great. Like that was great special effects, by the way.
Yeah. That the Max Headroom thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which again, something for Gen Xers and Xennials. Any of you millennials that don't know Max Headroom?
Yeah, you're not gonna
Google it and find out. It was an interesting thing.
You're gonna realize. Oh wait, what was that?
It was
you mean that wasn't
viral,
an Eminem video? Basically,
no,
this is
Max Headroom was viral videos before viral videos existed.
Yeah, pretty much syndicated viral videos.
Yeah.
I always thought that was America's Funniest Home Videos, was syndicated viral video.
No, America's Funniest Home
like
Videos.
That's basically Vine before Vine without intentional.
For the most part.
Yeah.
For the most part. That was Epic Fails before Epic Fails.
Yeah.
It really, really was. I remember I had a grandfather that did not like watching that because he didn't understand the humor in somebody getting hit in the balls. I do.
It's funny.
It's funny as hell.
Yeah.
Even when it happens to you sometimes, it's years later, it's funny as hell. I can say I've taken a baseball bat to the balls. Then I was not very funny. Now it's a hilarious story. It's funny as all get out. But okay.
Continuing.
But yeah, Spaceballs, so many good references.
Was that,
in that
the last film he did?
No.
For a while?
Well,
it wasn't the last film, but
Spaceballs,
I mean, like, he had a huge break, didn't he?
Spaceballs is in 87. So from 81 to 87,
really, like,
he had a little bit of
okay,
a break.
Okay, so Spaceballs was 87, and then Men in Tights was...
Well, then we have one called Life Stinks. And this is another one I am not familiar with.
I'm not familiar with that one at all.
Yeah, that's not one I've really heard about or had much to do with.
We're going to have to have a look at that one.
That's going to be... So at some point, we need to watch Life Stinks, Silent Movie, and The 12 Chairs so that we can do a report back on what those are.
Holy smokes, there's three films we missed out on.
Yes.
Wonder what happened.
But then the next one we do have in 93, and that is The Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yes, the ultimate parody of a current film at the time.
Well, and what's funny is it doesn't just parody The Prince of Thieves, Robin Hood. It parodies the old, what's his name? Oh, God. The swashbuckler actor. He was a New Zealander. I cannot think of his name. Actually, he wasn't even a New Zealander. He lived on another island, Tasmanian. He was Tasmanian.
Oh.
Errol Flynn. It parodies the Errol Flynn Robin Hood as well.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, for a long time, the Errol Flynn was kind of the standard in Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And then you had Prince of Thieves, which is supposed to be the more modern update, and it was terrible casting.
I have a question.
Except for the villain.
I think the only time I was ever familiar with Errol Flynn Robin Hood was actually a Looney Tunes cartoon where he cameos in it.
Interesting.
It is a life shot cameo. It was a Bugs Bunny cartoon that was parodying Robin Hood. It was not the Daffy Duck one. Which is one of my favorite Looney Tunes bits ever.
The Daffy Duck Robin Hood is good.
Yeah, with Porky Pig as Friar Tuck and like all that. Great. Except this one had to do with, it was Bugs Bunny versus Elmer Fudd. It was one of those ones.
Okay.
And it ends with Errol Flynn as Robin Hood. Like, I think it's like was the Errol Flynn Robin Hood, was that a Warner production?
I might
want to look that up, because that footage that they shot was actually used in, like, there was some footage they shot specifically for that cartoon.
I think
they were just like, I bet you Mel Blanc went to the studio and was like, hey guys, we got an opportunity. You're filming this just up the way. Can you guys shoot something for me real quick? And then we'll put it in a Bugs Bunny cartoon and we'll co-release it.
Or it's something that they just rotoscoped the animation on top of, drew the animation.
Well,
it
wasn't on top of it. No, it's just a single shot. And then it goes back to Bugs, like it was shot separately.
So it could have just been taking something from the film itself, too.
Could have been. But it was pretty funny.
But, no, for a long time, that was kind of the gold standard in the Robin Hood movies. Errol Flynn was able to pull off the accent.
Yeah.
Unlike...
Robin Hoods?
Unlike other Robin Hoods. Very good. You did it even better than I did by getting the line in there.
Thank you.
But... That had more of the swashbuckling element and the and more of the fencing style sword fighting in it,
mm-hmm.
than the Prince of Thieves version, which we're dealing with definitely more accurate Crusade era swords,
because
that's the era it was set in, was Crusade
for sure.
But you know, that was more of an attempt to make a gritty, more realistic version. And again, we got Alan Rickman out of that, man. That was one of his first major film roles. Between that and Die Hard were like his first major film roles.
Yeah.
And so thankful to have gotten Alan Rickman, because damn.
Dude.
The stuff that he was able to do, such a good actor.
Yeah.
The fact that at some one point in his career, he signed on to a comedy movie for the hell of it and totally blew the comedy movie away, even though he mainly did serious acting stuff and he had trained as a Shakespearean actor in theater before all of that.
Yeah.
He did one major comedy movie and was freaking hilarious in the comedy movie.
Absolutely.
Inspired people in that movie to do better jobs. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But anyway. but Robin Hood, Men in Tights, so good.
Yeah.
So funny. Dom DeLuise doing a Marlon Brando impersonation.
He was good, too.
It's so funny. So funny.
He was good. Like, he was the right amount of parody to it,
yeah.
too.
the freaking lizard, because of course the lizard is supposed to be a parody of the cat that Brando has during that wedding scene.
Yeah.
The cat literally walked on set just randomly, and he just picked the cat up and started using the cat for the scene.
Wow.
Just out of nowhere, because that was Marlon Brando. While they made what's his name? I think his character was Sonny in the Godfather movies. Anyway, they made other people have to actually hold his lines, Brando's lines, so that he could read off a piece of cardboard his lines, because he refused to memorize lines at that time. That was before he was using earpieces.
Yeah, I was gonna say he had people like tape their lines to their chests and stuff while they were facing away from camera, and so that he could just read the line.
That was before he started using the earpieces, which he used later in his career.
Yeah,
even later in his career. But yeah, Dom DeLuise in that. So many quotable lines in that movie. So many great characters. Dave Chappelle, you mentioned him at one point when we were talking earlier today. How that was really, you said, a kickoff for his career.
It was a breakout role. He was super young. He was like 22 when he did that.
You get Chef from South Park as his dad. That was Isaac Hayes.
Isaac Hayes played his dad. You're right.
That's Isaac Hayes. I mean, you get again Roger Reese as the sheriff. So amazing, great British actor.
Yeah.
What's his name? Lewis. Who played the prince.
No, not Jerry. I know who you're talking about.
Anyway, again, amazing performance, moving mole on his face. Yeah. So funny. Tracy Ullman as the witch.
Oh, she was good.
So good. What's your name? Latrine. Really? That's a heck of a name. Well, family changed it. What it used to be. Shit house. So good. So funny. I touched it. Just a little bit. I mean, everything in that movie is a great parody of all of the Robin Hoods. So the whole pointy hat and the tights and the boar scene, that's from the Errol Flynn Robin Hood. That's a parody from that.
Oh, okay.
That's where you get those pieces of parody in.
Man.
But, I mean, and then Eric Allen Kramer. I can't even believe I'm not even thinking of Eric Allen Kramer.
Who is he in?
He plays the Little John in Men in Tights.
Oh, cool. He was good, too.
Well, that's an actor that's been around for a long time. In the original Lou Ferrigno Hulk TV show, he played Thor.
He did?
Yes. But now fast forward to American Wedding, the third American Pie movie.
Yeah.
He's the guy that does the dance-off with Stifler in the gay bar when they're looking for the wedding dress design.
You're kidding.
That's Eric Allen Kramer. And then he also was on a TV show, Good Luck Charlie.
Wow.
For the Disney Channel. I think Disney Channel, for like 6 or 7 years as the dad on the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, he's just been, he's been pretty active since, huh?
All over the place. And he's such a fun actor. The whole stick fighting thing where they have the normal sticks.
Yeah.
They end up with little tiny ones smacking each other's fingers like we used to do with pencils back in grade school. So much fun. So that was 93. Now I move into the last movie that he made as a director. Now he's done a lot of voice work again. He's done a lot of other bits and pieces. I think some of his funniest voice work is the Hotel Transylvania movies. Adam Sandler's kind of, hey, I'm making movies with all of my friends again, but this time we're just going to be voices.
Cool.
So let's get everybody together that I know to do some voices, just like we did for the movie Grown Ups and Grown Ups 2 and, every movie I'm making now.
Right.
He plays the original Dracula, Adam Sandler's character's dad. It's so perfect.
That's fantastic.
It's so beautiful. And he's got the heavy accent and everything, doing a Transylvanian type thing.
Oh.
It's so good. When you finally hear him speak, I don't think he comes out until he comes out in the second one, because that's when there's a little grandkid running around, Drax's grandkid running around.
Yeah.
And he comes out to check out the new grandkid to see if the grandkid's a vampire or not.
Right.
And if he's not a vampire, he's basically going to eat the grandkid. So when you hear his voice, it's like, holy crap, it's Mel Brooks. That's hilarious. Adam Sandler got Mel Brooks to play his dad.
That's fantastic.
How much better could it get?
Yeah.
But the last movie he made was Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Yes.
His parody of all Dracula stuff. I think he tried to get again, this is another topical thing because Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves comes out. He does Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Bram Stoker's Dracula comes out with Gary Oldman, Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, Anthony Hopkins. My personal favorite Dracula movie ever. I can even overlook Keanu Reeves, who I love in almost everything else. I can overlook him in this because so much of the rest of the cast is amazing.
Yeah.
Funny enough, guess who's in Dracula Dead and Loving It? Cary Elwes, who played, or not Dead and Loving It, Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Francis Ford Coppola's version.
Yeah.
Cary Elwes is in that. And of course, he was Robin Hood in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Right.
Funny, around the same time, he plays a comedic parody character, which is almost a parody of an earlier character that he played, one of his breakout roles, like the role in Princess Bride.
Yeah.
And then he plays a very serious character in Bram Stoker's Dracula. Very funny.
And I remember he was, that's the thing, it's like, I think Keanu Reeves is the only like dark spot on that entire film.
On the Bram Stoker's
one. When it comes down to that. I can't remember if they actually parody that at any point.
Winona Ryder a little bit, but.
I think she was all right. She was pretty good. I mean.
Well, there's.
But here's the thing. Even Keanu Reeves went out and said, I did not fit for this. I don't know why they
wanted
me,
somebody.
Okay?
Basically, they wanted somebody young that would attract attention.
Yeah. They were looking for him for the star power, and it just wasn't compatible.
Anthony Hopkins had done the one movie, The Silence of the Lambs, but he hadn't hit big, but he had nothing else beyond that. And he was a supporting role, not a major role.
Yeah.
But then you have everybody else in there. Gary Oldman at that time had just had a bunch of small roles. Now he's freaking Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
But then he just had a bunch of small roles.
Oh, dude.
And there was nobody else in the cast that was a big enough draw. Mm-hmm. Although Tom Waits, that's kind of an amusing little side thing in the cast.
That's right.
He's Renfield. Yeah.
Yes.
Such a good little role for him.
Yeah.
And his voice is perfect for like the psychotic mania that character has.
Yes.
But to Dracula Dead and Loving It. I've only seen it a couple of times, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, so it's not one that I have great memory of. The only things I really remember is Leslie Nielsen as Dracula. And it's just, I personally felt that at that point, Leslie Nielsen, while an amazing comedic gem of an actor that we were lucky to have, I felt he was just too oversaturated in the parody market at that point. He had done all the Naked Gun movies at that point.
Yeah.
He had done probably one of the best parodies ever. In Airplane.
Yes. Here's the thing about Leslie Nielsen, which I kind of like noticed as the gears were turning. That is the only role I had actually seen him in where he is very emotive. Like all of the rest of the parody films were very straight laced Dragnet style.
True.
He was deadpan the whole time.
True.
And that's kind of why it was funny. This film is the only one where he was outlandish.
I get, and maybe that's the thing that didn't work for me. Maybe that's what it was.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it was just the
because I liked that. I liked seeing him more than just deadpan. But seeing him play Dracula
too.
Like that makes sense. Deadpan when he was trying to do the dramatic actor stuff when he was playing. I saw his audition for was it Ben Hur? I think he auditioned for Ben Hur at one point.
He's going up against Heston.
He was going up against I believe he auditioned for. No, wait. No.
Okay, I was going to say.
Heston's, and the antagonist of that film. What was his name? Character's name.
God, I don't know.
He's actually playing that character, and the guy who ended up playing that character was playing Heston's character in the audition that I saw.
Ah, okay.
But he was playing the counterpart, and I can't remember the name right now. It's been forever. But, yeah, it was either.
Because he was on, wasn't Leslie Nielsen on in the movie Forbidden Planet?
I don't know. Back in the day?
I think so. We'll do some research and get back to you.
Yeah, we got to take a look at that.
But
seeing Leslie Nielsen as a redhead, which I had no idea he was a redhead, and he's like in his 20s when
he's
auditioning.
That makes sense if his hair's white like it was later in life. It actually makes more sense that he's a redhead.
Interesting.
Redheads go to gray and then white very quickly in life. It's part of the pigmentation. So guess what? You're screwed.
Oh well, I ain't screwed, man. At least I'm gonna keep all my hair.
The beard, my beard,
uh-huh.
All the white that's in my beard,
uh-huh.
That's actually all red hair.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
Well, this is already starting to go.
To white.
I'm getting white in the sideburns and.
That's
all
right.
If I grow the beard out, I got white patches all over the place.
But yeah, that kind of gives a history of, you know, the Mel Brooks films and kind of what he did, even a short number of films, the impact that he had from his comedic styling, this parody. I mean, we see parody stuff now all the time everywhere. We see even serious products parody themselves. I mean, there are moments in the Avengers Endgame movie, which recently has come out, where it parodies itself, minor ways, but it actually parodies the previous Avengers movies, the previous Marvel Cinematic Universe right. movies. But on a larger scale, there are actors and film groups that have made their kind of mark by doing the parodies. The guys that do the epic movie parody stuff, the Meet the Spartans, same group of guys. They've got like six or seven different movies where they've been able to do this hardcore parodying style that, hey, they made money at it, man. They got multiple movies done by doing this kind of stuff.
It could just be half the reason why I haven't seen them, or I don't just really wish to, is because Mel Brooks isn't part of it.
Well,
I just feel like there's a magic to his stuff, the way that he does it. Although, I can also take a look at Kentucky Fried Movie and Airplane with full of jokes that just haven't aged well and still think those are funny.
Well, but that was a specific comedy team that did those.
Right, and that's not the comedy team that does this, but at least those two, like you've got the Mel Brooks type, and then you have the team that did those guys.
I forget their names. They had a specific name for the three guys that made those movies. Another one of theirs that they did was Top Secret.
Oh, okay. Top Secret. Val Kilmer. Yeah. Top Secret. And well, they did the Naked Gun films too, didn't they?
Yes, I think they did. I think
that's like that was part of it. Like there's plenty to parody in these current times. Why the hell? And I hear that there's supposedly a comic book movie.
Like a parody comic book
movie? Yeah, like a parody comic book movie.
Okay.
But apparently these comedies, they're just not even hitting. They're not even hitting at all. They're barely making a splash.
I mean, I can say I watched like the one group that does the epic movie Meet the Spartans. I watched the Vampire Suck, their Twilight parody directly after watching some of the Twilight movies.
How was it?
I'd seen it before, but watching it again after, there's some moments that are really, really funny.
Right.
And then there are other moments where I think this is the difference between Mel Brooks and them.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks knew when to stop a joke.
They just keep
and
going.
Keep the story going.
Yeah.
They just play the joke too far to death.
So they beat it. Yeah. They beat it dead, basically. That's what I have been dissatisfied in. Like, I think the most recent one that I saw that I thought was funny, the most recent, and this is like 20 years old.
Yeah.
Not another teen movie. That one was pretty fun.
Oh my God, so many and it things still was like that movie.
The team that did Not Another Teen Movie was the same team that did Scary Movie.
Yeah.
And I think part of it was,
I will say the first Scary Movie was really
good.
That was
funny.
But the problem with Scary Movie is they were making a comedic parody of a movie that was a highbrow parody.
Oh, you're talking like Scream?
Scream was a highbrow parody.
Yeah, that was the point.
If I say my favorite horror movie, it's the first Scream movie.
Yeah.
Because it's a highbrow parody of horror movies in general.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
Then
to make a comedic parody of it, And Scary Movie wasn't just a comedic parody of Scream, it was also a comedic parody of I Know What You Did Last Summer, which was just a terrible movie.
Those are the first two that, yeah. I mean, I Know What You Did Last Summer. That wasn't a Craven film, was it?
No. Okay. Actually, interestingly enough,
that was a film that was...
Wes Craven's last film, I believe, was Scream 3. That was the last film he completed.
Oh, wow. Well, that makes sense. I mean, it wasn't specifically three.
It was 4.
There was a fourth one?
Yes, it was Scream 4.
How bad was the fourth one? I believe that
was actually really good. It goes full circle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Full circle with three
don't
went full
spoil
circle.
It for
four,
me because I think I'm going to go watch
more.
It.
No, 4 is pretty good. It's pretty good.
Okay.
The people the actress who's one of the actresses in it, if you know who her family is, specifically if you know who her dad is, her character developments make total sense. But cool. You have to know who her dad is because basically he's one of those people. There's like five actors that are going around right now that if you need somebody to play the devil or the bad guy in something, the really heinous bad guy.
Yeah.
That's the guy that you pick to do it.
Gotcha.
And he's that guy. So, coming to the end, Mel Brooks, good number of films, very influential. Obviously, we love them. Your favorite, again, was what?
My personal favorite was Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles?
Yeah.
Fantastic. And any specific reason why, or did we cover it already?
Not so much as I would think. The thing about Blazing Saddles to me, the reason why I like it so much is because it was so culturally important, especially at the time. This is a movie that was made in the mid-70s when racism, as it still is very apparent, was very, very rampant, but you also had like the rise of the Black Panthers and you had that kind of stuff that was going on.
It was a much more heated issue than even it is now.
Yes. The thing about it, though, is when you look at it again, it shows you a lot about racism as being an issue, especially dealing with someone that may not have been black, but understood what the repercussions of extreme racism was.
Yeah.
As he is Jewish, right?
Yeah.
That's looking at it in that lens, you notice, and every bit of and there's two types of people that like that film, which I find really funny. You have people that you have racists that like the race jokes because they're racist and they think they're funny because they're racist.
Yeah.
And you have people that are culturally aware that like the race jokes because they're educating.
Well, and I think one of the key scenes in the movie that really helps with the people that are of your second group.
Yeah.
Is when they're having the town meeting.
Yes.
And there's the town meeting, and this town's basically a bunch of racists that don't want a black sheriff and don't want to have anything dealing with
the sheriff is near
black sheriff.
That okay? one there?
Well, no, it's even the meeting afterwards. When you find out what the last name of all the people in the town is, what's the last name of the people in town? Do you remember?
No.
Their last name is Johnson. Basically, what Mel Brooks wrote into there is the town is a bunch of people that are dicks. Their last name, Johnson.
Right. Because
Johnson definitely would have been slang for that at that time period.
Right.
And so all these racist townspeople are just a bunch of dicks.
That's fantastic.
And don't quack me out on that one because they need to hear the word. Sorry. So, but that's the point. That's kind of the point that he's making is all these racist people are that because they're all Johnsons. They're also all Johnsons, which means they're all inbred and stupid. There's so many different jokes involved.
Because they all have the same last name.
They all have the same last name. There's so many different jokes involved in the town of to show that they're wrong for being racist. They're a bunch of inbred, terrible people until the sheriff, you know, whatever. Watch the movie, get the whole story. But still, that's kind of the highbrow part of it is you have the race humor. You have these racist jokes, but they're being done by people that really aren't good people.
What I really like about it too is it's much more socially aware than people perceive it to be because it's not just there is obviously the black versus white mentality, but there's also the rich versus poor mentality.
There is
quite a bit of that. There's a lot going on.
I don't know how familiar you are with the phenomenon of the Sambo personality. It's a thing that was used and done by black Americans, former slaves and slaves of that kind of happy-go-lucky black guy of that time period, former slave kind of thing, the smiling one, the one that they did all of the blackface shows about, the Al Jolson style shows about at the time. And it was kind of a shield to protect them from the racism of the time.
Huh.
That smiling face, that happy face. You've seen depictions of this thing. It shows how they use that and culturally how it was being used or at least perceived to be used.
Right.
When they're talking to the workers on the railroad track are talking to the various cowboy figures and then they're talking amongst themselves, completely different attitude, completely different way of doing it, showing that they had to put on a different public face to protect themselves during the times of even more extreme racism.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, really great movie for so many social commentary. I applaud you. Good choice in movie.
Thank you.
Mine isn't as good. Mine's just the Robin Hood one. And that's just
really? Yeah, okay. I am surprised because I figured it would be Spaceballs.
No, it's the Robin Hood one. I love the Spaceballs movie. Don't get me wrong. But the Robin Hood one, just because I feel, as you say, a direct parody to a direct movie.
Yeah.
It does such a good job. And then I admit, I got a bit of a love for Cary Elwes as an actor. The Princess Bride is like one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
And so anything that Cary Elwes did after I saw him in Princess Bride, he's still Wesley. He's still the hero.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's a simple reason. Nothing too major about it. Plus, I think there's a lifesaver joke in that movie where like the sheriff is dying because he's been stabbed, and the witch literally gives him like a wintergreen lifesaver to save his life because it's a lifesaver. And when you have something
that's
like
so,
that,
that sounds like a joke written by a 6-year-old.
But that's what's so funny about it. And it's since then, I've always had the idea of a joke of when somebody tells me, "Hey, you're a lifesaver." I always ask, "What flavor?"
Oh, jeez.
Just because, again, to me, that's a little funny joke. It's a dad joke before a dad joke.
Makes sense.
But anyway, so that's kind of it for us on our discussion of Mel Brooks' movies. I hope you all learned something. Maybe you want to be interested in watching some of his movies.
I know I did.
You sound like an after TV or after school TV special or something like that.
That's what I was going for.
That's fantastic, sir. Next week, we are going to be discussing the films of, I think, maybe a spiritual successor in many ways to Mel Brooks, that kept kind of comedy going, not in the parody style, but at least kept comedy going for our generation.
Yeah.
And the Gen Xers, and that would be Mr. Kevin Smith.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be fun going through some of his films. There are actually some I haven't seen. And I think more fun what our favorite Kevin Smith films are, because I think there's going to be some surprises involved in that.
Yeah.
So where can people listen to us, Mr. Mike?
Well, let's see here. You can check out our website, thezenialchronicles.com, or you can go to zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, if you don't want to type that much. Also, as far as Zenchron's concerned, you can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron. You also can check us out if you might be listening to us on YouTube right now. If you are, hit the subscribe button for us and ring that bell so that you get notified every time we put out a podcast. We put out a podcast every week at 7 o'clock specific 7 o'clock Pacific time.
Pacific time.
Pacific time on Thursday.
Specific
Thursdays.
Time.
Specific time.
Very specific time.
Specifically 7 o'clock Pacific time.
Dude, you pulled that off. Yeah. I could not have done that.
You'll see us. That's when our podcasts go out. If you just listen to us, which, I mean, our YouTube videos don't really have a lot of video. We'll be working on that. We'll be hopefully putting that in. But you can listen to us as well. Our podcasts are on Google Play. We're on, or Google Podcast, I think is
Google
what it
is. Google Podcast, yeah.
Google Podcast. We are also on Spotify. We're also on TuneIn. And you can actually listen to the podcast directly on our websites at thezenialchronicles.com or zenchron.com.
Or download them onto whatever device that you have.
You can download them as well. We still get counted when you download us, so that's cool.
Thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed, and talk to you again next week.
All right. You guys have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.